The morning when they came back, he took both sacks, he counted the number of omers in each sack, and he asked each person, how many members do you have in your family? They told him, and then in one of those two sacks he would find an additional omer to cover that slave. In heaven it was known who the slave belonged to, so that amount came down additionally for that person. This way, Moshe Rabbeinu would tell him who is the rightful owner of the slave. And here we see how the man revealed secrets that were hidden from people. Second case was, two, if a woman, for example, was divorced from her first husband, and she did not realize that she was pregnant at the time. Then, later on, and she married a second husband. With the second husband, she gave birth to a child after 7 months of pregnancy. 7 months. She did not know now whose child, who was the father of that child. Was this child born in the seventh month of the second marriage, or was the child born after 9 months of pregnancy, being the child of the first husband? It's a very important question. If this is a child of the first husband, that child cannot marry the other children of that first husband, its brothers and sisters. If this is a child of the second husband, then, of course, the child still cannot marry the brother or sister from the first husband that had been born from this same mother. But he could marry the brother or sister from the first husband if he had had a wife before this one. Follow that? So it was important to detect now, to determine whether this child was born from the first husband or the second. And how was this done? Again, through the man. The man would come down and it would prove which was the true father by having the omer appear in the home of the first husband, the divorced one, or in the home of the new husband. Number of other cases too where this revealed told that which was completely hidden. In addition, the Gemara says that together with the men, the miracle of the men was that together with the men that descended from heaven spices, perfumes for the women. In addition to, diamonds fell from heaven together with the men. And this, of course, solves a problem, solves a riddle. How did the Jews have diamonds to contribute to the Mishkan, to the holy temple in the desert? Diamonds for the Kohen Gadol's chest plate. The answer was, they had these diamonds that came down from heaven together with the men. And when the man fell, the Pasuk says, in one spot, the man fell on the camp of the Jews. Another sentence says, the people would go out and collect it. Third sentence says, people would have to scatter far and wide to collect it. You have three contradictory statements. The man says, the answer is that, for tzadikim, the man fell right at their doorstep. Ordinary people had to go outside of the camp. But the Shaim had to go far away from the camp, scatter far and wide to be able to collect this man. This was proof that the man was not the same for everyone. However, the Torah says that the Jews were justified in asking for man. It's bread. They must have bread that sustains a person's life. They had no other bread. They were justified in requesting it. The man came down. When did the man descend from heaven? Early in the morning. The Jews walked out, they found the man at the very beginning of the day. When they asked for meat, however, this was an arrogance on their part. After all, they had cattle. They could have used the cattle for meat. They asked for meat, and Hashem became angry, and he said, I'll give you meat. And the meat came down too, the Slav special birds that flew over the camp. Yes, they had meat, but this meat that they asked unjustifiably, the meat came to them towards evening, which was bad. because meat takes time to prepare, so that there was no time left for them the evening, and it meant they had to either stay up very late or not eat it in the right time. The Gemara says that we learn an important lesson from here, something which is not practiced too often. The Gemara says, if a person has a large meal, a large meal means a meat meal, not a dairy meal, when is the right time to eat it? Lunchtime or supper time? What is the proper time for a meat meal? The Gemara says the proper time is by day and not at night. A heavy meat meal, the person eats one meat meal a day, it should be for lunch and not in the evening. Evening should be a lighter meal. Proof of the fact that the Torah considers this bad for the Jews that the meat came down at night. And the Gemara says the students of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai Zal asked Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai Zal this question: why did Hashem make the man come down daily, every morning? Why didn't he provide them with this miracle once, every year? Once a year, the man should come down from heaven, enough to last them for an entire year. Shimon bar Yochai Zal told him there are three answers for it. The first answer is the most important. He said, I'll give you an example. A king had a son, and he provided his son with the necessary means of a livelihood, especially with food, and he set aside an allotment for his son once a year to take his nourishment, his food that was necessary. The son did not visit his father. Once a year he came around to visit him, to be nice to him, to get this allotment. The king decided then, let my son receive his allotment daily, just enough for each day. This way the son was forced to come to the father, the king, each day, to be nice to him, to ask him, to request for his food allotment, and of course this brought the son and father much closer together. So too, if Hashem would give the Jews enough food once a year, they'd have their food, they'd have their needs, necessities, they wouldn't have to come before Hashem to ask. Now, if a man had a large family, he had a wife, four or five children, he'd be worried about what he's going to eat tomorrow. Hashem gave him man just for one day. He's worried about what's going to happen tomorrow. Will this miracle be repeated tomorrow? So this father had to go out and to sully, to pray to Hashem, put his heart into the prayers. When? Every single day. And this brought the Jews much closer to Hashem. Second answer is, of course, that it's the man came down, it was warm. It was sun-baked. Warm and fresh. So it's much better to have fresh bread, bagels, every morning, rather than buy it once a year and have it turn stale to a degree. Third answer simply, naturally, is that they had to travel, they keep traveling and have to carry along a large extra load of food. A year's supply would make traveling so much more difficult. Therefore, a man was sent down just once a year. This was the answer of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai Zal. And the Gemara goes in to tell us, to explain more clearly, a chapter in Nevi. Chapter in the Nevi Yecheskel. Yecheskel was one of the first prophets, time of the first Beit HaMikdash, around the time of the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash. There's an entire Sefer Yecheskel in the Nach, the Book of Neviim. And there we find a story Yecheskel HaNavi told. The Gemara tells us this story as quoted from the Navi, with the Gemara's addition at points to explain the story more clearly. We won't stop each time to say what the Gemara injects into the story. We'll combine it as one. But if you learned the Navi Yecheskel, you would detect yourselves immediately where the Gemara adds these statements. And then we find that Yechezkel said, one time I was sitting in my home and suddenly I saw a strange sight, tremendous fire, large proportions. I recognize this fire as the symbol of heaven, like the Shekhinah. From this fire there came forth the form of a hand, which lifted me by my hair, the peot, raised me, lifted me, and carried me to Yerushalayim, to the spot, to the Beit HaMikdash. This I saw in a vision. Not that I was physically carried, but I felt a vision of myself being carried by this heavenly hand and let me down at the north gate to the Beit HaMikdash. There at this north gate I saw the special idol, famous idol that had brought so much calamity to the Jewish faith and which had brought so much anger to heaven. And the voice said to me, heavenly voice said, look, see the evils that the Jews are perpetrating. Here is an idol set up just to anger Hashem. But this is not all. Go further. In the north wall, as you enter, there's a door to the yard. In that door, there's a little hole. Dig into that hole and make that hole larger so that you can go through. Yechezkel the prophet said, this I did, and I entered into this yard, and there I saw 70 of the elders of the Jews offering a sacrifice of Ketoret. Ketoret is the holiest sacrifice there is. It's a combination of 11 spices. These 11 spices combined make up the most important korban possible. The power of Ketoret is, the Gemara says, that when Moshe Rabbeinu went to heaven, he was notified, it was revealed to him that in case there ever be a magifa, a plague, chas v'shalom, the way to stop the plague is to offer a sacrifice of Ketoret. So powerful is this korban. The Zohar HaKadosh says that Ketoret is so powerful because it covers all the four worlds. It goes from the Olam HaAsiyah through to the angelic world of Olam HaYetzirah to Olam HaBriyah to Olam HaTzilut, the lowest point to the highest point. Here, the voice said, here these 70 elders are taking this most important korban of Ketoret, which is supposed to prevent death, and they are using this as a korban to the idols, which means they're going to have the very opposite effect now through this Ketoret. And this is not all yet. Go further. The prophet went further. There he saw the women who were worshipping, serving an idol, and their work, evil work, was it was an idol which they placed, they set fire to the inside of the idol, and the idol of course was made of metal that couldn't burn, but the fire rose upwards and the eyes were made of lead, so that when the heat of the fire reached the eyes melted and the lead melted and it looked like tears were coming down. These women cried, the idol is crying for sacrifices. The voice said, go further. Yechezkel the prophet went further. He came to the Heichal. There he saw 25 men bowing, but not to the Heichal, bowing with their backs to the Heichal towards the sun. The sun is in the east, worshipping the sun. Not just worshipping the sun, but showing disdain, arrogance, disrespect to the Heichal by turning their backs, bowing down to the sun with their backs to the Heichal. The voice said, just as they are doing, so am I going to bring punishment to them. They think, they say that Chas v'Shalom Hashem has left. He's not present, Chas v'Shalom, he doesn't see this. I'm going to teach them a lesson now, a horrible lesson of punishment. And suddenly, Hezekiah the prophet said, I saw six forms appear. Six angels in human form. These six were angels of destruction. Each one has a famous name, Destruction. And then I saw with them one angel dressed differently. This was the angel Gavriel, especially with them. And this malach is a good malach. He is the malach of fire, but he's also a good malach who attempts to save the Jews from the harm. And then a voice came and said to this malach, go out and go through the city and carve the letter Tef on the forehead of all its tzaddikim, so that when these six angels of destruction go out to kill, they will spare those with the letter Tef on their foreheads. Tef stands for Tichye, you shall live. Then the voice said, now you six go out and destroy and kill. And these six immediately wiped out these 25 men who were bowing. They went further, leaving the Beit HaMikdash. They kept on going and destroying the women and the 70 elders. And the voice said, go kill, kill, men, women, children, kill, don't stop. The Yechezkel prophet said, then I fell forward on my face and I pleaded with heaven, I pleaded with Hashem, and I said, would you want to destroy your children, wipe out the Jews? And the voice said to the malach, the good malach, go to the kirubim, the special angels, and there take from these angels of fire, there take coals of fire and throw these coals of fire on the city. This will cause complete destruction. This malach Gavriel went. He came to the special angels of fire. He reached out and he said to them, give me these coals of fire. Now, hidden in this is the point that this angel who gave it to him was the angel Michael. This malach is the official angel of the Jews. Though we know that every country, every nation has its angel, the Jews have only Hashem, yet we find in the Chumash that when the people had committed the wrong with the idol, the golden calf, Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, Hine Malachi Yelech Lefanecha, behold, my angel Malachi, my angel will go before you, he will lead you from now on. And Moshe Rabbeinu prayed to Hashem and said, "Im panecha olchim, we want only you. If not you, we don't want to go. We want only Hashem to lead us, and no angel shall lead us." The Zohar Kadosh says, "Malachi, my angel, take those letters and turn them around, and you have the word Michael." Which angel was that? Michael, who was the one that Hashem appointed to take care of the Jews. He is the angel for the Jews at a time when Chas v'Shalom the Shechina leaves the Jews. But naturally, he is the best malach out. Next to the Shechina, he is the best angel selected for the Jews. So this malach is so great that when it came to taking those coals of fire, note that the malach Gavriel, the angel of fire, said, give me these coals. The angel gave him these coals. He went out, he threw the coals on the city as he was ordered. He came back and he reported, I have performed as you have commanded me. These were his words. Immediately the voice came from heaven and said, take this Malach Gavriel and give him 60 lashes of fire. Why? Because the voice said, you were commanded to do something. Now, you failed to perform this command. Why? Obviously, because you had pity on the Jews. You were told clearly, take the coals of fire and throw it upon the Jews. If you take the coals, they retain their original heat. But if a different malach takes them and hands them to you, in the interim they cool off. So you play this trick by saying to the malach, give me, hand me these coals of fire. In that motion of one malach holding it, handing it to the second, they cooled enough so that they could not cause complete destruction. Now, the claim is, why do you deserve 60 lashes of fire? Because one of two things. If you're good, be good all the way. You want to disobey a command of heaven because you want to defend the Jews. What you should have done was refuse. Don't take the coals at all. If you did take the coals, you should have done as you were told. Take them yourself, not to have them handed to you. Secondly, how do you come and report, I have done just as you have told me? You're not supposed to give a report like that. One should never report about harm or destruction. There's no such thing as reporting harm or destruction. This is a general rule we find throughout the Torah. We find, for example, that in the Megillat Esther, says that there was a messenger sent by Mordechai to Esther, telling her about the danger that the Jews were in, and that she should go before Ahasuerus, the king, to plead for the Jews. Then she said, how can I go if I wasn't summoned by the king? If I go, I might be put to death. I can walk inside without permission. Megillah says that her reply was brought back to Mordechai. It doesn't say this messenger, Hatach, brought it back. Why? Because you do not bring a reply of something that is bad. You cannot be a messenger of something that is bad. So here too, how did you come to report, I did something that is so harmful to the Jews? In other words, your actions were all wrong, and therefore he was given 60 fiery heavenly lashes. Now, in addition, it was decided you lose your position in high rank, and in your place we're going to take the Malach, the angel Dubi. At the end of every name, of course, you have the word Kael that represents a Malach. This Dubi with that name Kael is the Malach of Persia. He was brought and placed to this high rank, and he was given this position for a period of 21 days. 21 days is a rough number. It's a number of days between Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, 17 days in Tammuz, and the 9th day of Av, those 3 weeks of mourning before the destruction of the Holy Temple. 21 days is the period of time that it takes for an egg to be hatched, to be laid, because an egg is a sign of Abelut, of mourning too. So 21 days, this Malach of Persia took over the leadership and the ruling power, and he said, I demand that I be given the right to have my people, the Persians, to declare a tax, a head tax for every Jew. This, of course, makes life difficult for the Jews. This request was granted. Then he said, I demand the right to have this head tax placed on the rabbis too. They should pay a head tax. According to Hebrew law, rabbis are exempt from tax. When he said this, this Malach Gavil rose up and said, I object to this, because these Talmidei Chachamim, look, even their wives stay up late at night. They don't sleep, waiting for their husbands to come home from the yeshiva, from learning Torah, that they can feed them. They lose sleep at night, every single night, and they consider this worthy enough because they will get it back all and get eaten. If the wives are so loyal to Torah, then imagine what the husbands are like, the Talmidei Chachamim. On these attacks should be placed, and the heavenly judge refused to listen to this claim, which meant that the Persian angel, the angel of Persia, was about to win out. So Gabriel, the Malach, rose up again and said, Hashem, I plead with you on another count. You would take all the wise men of the Goyim, wise leaders of Goyim, put them on a scale, and take just one tzaddik of the Jews, Daniel, put him on a scale, he would surely outweigh all of them. One tzaddik of your people is worth more than all their wise men of the Goyim. On ones like these, a tax should be placed. So Hashem said, who is this malach? I mean, how remarkable this malach, Gavriel, who was punished before, strives so hard to speak good about my children. In that case, I command that he return. He come back in my good grace, and he will now be the leader again, the higher rank, and the malach of Persia is expelled. At that moment, Gavriel came forward, and he found this angel of Persia holding a note received in heaven, a heavenly note, which said that the taxes should be placed upon the Jews and upon the Talmidei Chachamim. He reached out, grabbed for this note, pulled it away from this malach, and the malach took it and swallowed it to avoid it being taken away. But as he swallowed it, the letters, the seal, was erased from it in the act of swallowing. And that's why the Gemara says we find today, at that time, when the Persians took over, that they did place a head tax upon the Jews, but not on the Talmidei Chachamim. This still, in this vision, the Malach Yechezkel, the Navi, Prophet Yechezkel, said, and then this Malach Gavriel turned to me and said, I am the leader now. Yes, I will battle against the Persians. They should not do harm to the Jews. But I tell you, in the future, there's going to come a time that I will be out of power. I will be powerless to battle when the Greek Empire takes over. Woe is to us, to the Jews, Chas v'Shalom, the Greek Empire takes over. And they will do so much harm, King Antiochus, the time of the miracle of Hanukkah. The harm that they will do in harming the Jews, the evil decrees, and destroying partially the Holy Temple. And there's nothing that I cry, oi, oi, but I'm not being listened to. This I state for the future. This was the vision of Yechezkel the prophet, and the explanation. Naturally, we must understand that the terms, when we use terms here that resemble physical, the place, malachim, the physical terms, the Zohar Kadosh says that one who considers this literally in physical terms is the same as one who considers heavenly powers in physical terms, like building an idol, making an idol or a physical being out of heavenly powers, Chas v'Shalom. So that all these statements have very hidden meanings to them, and they are purely spiritual. But the main part of the lesson is showing us the importance of speaking well about Jews, no matter what condition, what status they're in. Because even the so great an angel, Gavriel, who had been expelled from the heavenly court because he spoke well of the Jews, his expulsion was removed, and he was again brought close to his high rank, which means a chet to always speak lashon tov, good about Jews. The Gemara says that on Yom Kippur there is a law, of course, that there are five inuyim, five types of suffering that a Jew is obligated to undertake. Eating, drinking are forbidden. The use of oil, pouring oil on the body, and washing, using water to wash with. Certainly, bathing is forbidden. Now, the fifth, of course, relates to husband and wife. Now, bathing being forbidden completely, this is one of the five inuyim. It's a question whether this is midoraita or midrabanan. That's a machloket. But it is definitely a serious, a strict law forbidden on Yom Kippur. The Gemara says, what if a person wants the mitzvah of visiting his father, or visiting his rabbi, or visiting a great person, great tzaddik, and he cannot get to that person, father or rabbi, except by crossing a body of water. There's no boat. He's got to walk through the water, wade through it, swim through it. This is bathing. Is he allowed to go through this body of water on Yom Kippur for this purpose? Even it says definitely he is permitted. Mitzvah is so great, kibud av, kibud abo is so great, that even on Yom Kippur, when this law is so strict, he's allowed to go through this body of water. Yemeda asks, what about the case of a rabbi who wants to visit a student? Is he allowed to go through a body of water? A rabbi going to a student, it's the same. There's a question of Torah being studied. Yemeda says, one rabbi states that I saw a rabbi, Zaidi, going to visit an Avchia Barashi, his student. Doesn't that prove that rabbi is allowed to go? Yemeda answers, Ravashi says that you did not see correctly. You saw one going to the other, but what you saw was the student going to the rabbi through a body of water, not the other way around. This is how the Gemara ends this topic, which means that we are left with this question hanging. Is it permissible or not? In the Shulchan Aruch, the Bet Yosef says that since this question is left in doubt, we must take the Chumrah, difficult side. Therefore, the law remains that a rabbi cannot visit a student. Later, Poskim and Shulchan Aruch say that we accept that. It's understood. You must always, in case of doubt, take the more difficult part, the chumrah. But no doubt that if the rabbi is going to visit the student, because in this case the rabbi needs the help of the student, he is in doubt about a certain law. And this student might have heard this law mentioned by a different rabbi. There is something the student knows the rabbi doesn't. Though he is a rabbi, the other is a student. At this moment, he needs him as a form of a rabbi. So here, even the rabbi too can go to visit a student through a body of water on Yom Kippur. That's the law stated in the Shulchan Aruch. The major law on Kippur, of course, is that food is forbidden. The Torah tells us that one of the most difficult laws to abide by is the mitzvah of fasting. That's physical suffering. And we have a law which says that Erev Kippur, you have to eat a lot. But keep in mind that the food you eat is for the sake of the mitzvah. The Torah tells us, the words of the Torah, you should fast on the ninth day of Tishrei. Now, Kippur is the tenth day. How could you fast on the ninth day? The Gemara answers, this means you should eat on the ninth day of Tishrei, and you get as much of a mitzvah eating Erev Kippur as the mitzvah of fasting on Kippur. Now, if the Torah would have said you should eat on the ninth day of Tishrei, what reward do you get? Reward for eating, which is not much of a mitzvah. It's not difficult. When Tana says fast, that means that your eating will be as great a mitzvah as though you fasted. And certainly reward for fasting is much bigger than the reward for eating. Now, why do we have to eat on the ninth day of Tishrei? Why is it so important? Because it's much more difficult to fast after eating a lot than when you haven't. The body is used to eating a lot, and then suddenly you break that chain, you go into a full fast. Makes the fasting much more difficult. Also, there's a hidden sign. This is in the Chumash, the Pasuk. But it says you should fast on the ninth day of the month. That's a sentence. This is a warning of the Torah. You're going to have to fast. In addition to this, the ninth day of which month? Of Av, Tisha B'Av. So though the destruction of the Beit Midrash came much later, both of them, but hidden in this sentence is a hint of what's going to come. Now, fasting on the ninth of Av is not Midoraita, it's Midrabanan. But we have that hidden secret message in the Torah itself, Torah telling us of a fast that's forthcoming. As we said, fasting on Kippur is compulsory. However, if it's a matter of serious illness, Chas v'Shalom, then a person is excused, only where it's serious, a matter of life and death. In the case of a woman who is pregnant, there is a problem where it may cause serious illness. We cannot take chances. So the Din says, if a woman is pregnant, she complains that she cannot bear, she cannot suffer through this Kippur, then we have to feed her. How do we go about it? We feed her a tiny drop where it's not considered actually eating. Breaking the law of the Torah, Doraita, is only if a person eats the size of a little larger than an olive. That's breaking the official law of the Torah. Less than that is not officially breaking the law of Torah. In other words, it is assuming a Torah, but you haven't got the penalty of death of karet as a person who eats the little larger than the size of an olive. So we say to the pregnant woman, at least we're going to feed you, at least eat that which is less than the actual forbidden size. Now what if she says, after eating this drop, she says, it's not enough, not sufficient to help me out of my dilemma, I must have more food. What do we do then? The Yemenah tells us two stories of what happened. Because we're speaking now about a pregnant woman. What causes a pregnant woman to suffer and to crave food? It's not just the woman, it's the child within the woman that craves this food. And this child within the woman has a lot of intelligence. Certainly is intelligent enough, because during the 9 months of pregnancy, this child is studying the entire Torah, being taught it by an angel. The child has powers of seeing far more than an ordinary human being. It's still connected to its life as a neshama in heaven. So the Gemara says, there was once a case where they came before Rabbeinu HaKadosh. You're going to see. Came before him a case of a pregnant woman, and they asked, what should we do? She claimed she must have food. Rabbeinu HaKadosh said, whisper into her ear, today is Yom Kippur. That message will go through her down to the child, and see what happens. They whispered into her ear, and she said, I'm not hungry anymore. Later she gave birth. Who did she give birth to? Rabbi Yochanan. This child, Rabbi Yochanan, the chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara says a second case came about also, this time before Rabbi Hanina, a pregnant woman. And again, she too claimed that she must have food. Mechanina said, we learned a lesson from Rabbeinu HaKadosh. Whispered to her ear that today is Yom Kippur. They whispered into her ear, and she felt no improvement. She must have food. She said, in that case, she must feed her as much as she needs. They fed her. Sometime later, she gave birth. This child turned out to be Shabtai, a man who gathered food, who hoarded food, and thereby caused the price of food to rise in the market, causing a lot of damage to the Jews in Eretz Yisrael. The Yemenah says, we see from here that you can detect the goodness, the purity of a child even before it's born. There's a way of detecting it. Naturally, you cannot use this as a test. Wouldn't necessarily always work. But in many cases, we see that it is factual that a child continues along a certain pattern. A person is born along a certain pattern. Some people control, break, overcome their evil nature. They turn out to be tzaddikim. Others, chas v'shalom, go the wrong way. In either case, though, we find that this method is one that was employed then. It has been used afterwards too, and it is a sign that a person should pray, as the Din says, pray to be zocheh, to have good children. though it says that tefillah doesn't necessarily help, because after all, the child born has his own free choice. You cannot dictate to a person what he should be. So you cannot pray to heaven and have heaven change this child to a tzaddik, because that means taking away the free choice from this Jew who's being born. But still, it will help to a certain degree. Some help must come of it. A person should do his best to bring up his child properly and pray and hope that with all this he will have the mazal, with all his efforts and his tefillah, to have the mazal, that will be zuchet to have true Jewish religious nachat from his children. Should all be zuchet to see good children, children's children, and to see the complete redemption, the geula shleimah, ויד משיח את קנו, וביה בית המקדש, ומהירה בימינו, אמן, ויאמן.